welcome to Series 14, Episode 4 of York Hospital Ball, a series focusing on cult heroes of Bootham Crescent. This week's guest is Paul Stevenson, a player whose impact is remembered fondly by York City supporters, including James Wright, our sponsor for this episode. Stevo was one of James' first heroes since attending games at the start of the 95-96 season. His trickery on the wing and assists stick in the memory of his early seasons, especially the cut-ins from the left wing against Everton, bending a right-footed shot onto the post that Gary Bull slotted the rebound in to put City 2-1 up on the night, and the ball over the top for Graham Murty to run onto, slotting in for the third goal. And this interview covers that iconic game in detail, as well as other moments from his time with the Minstermen and the other teams represented in his career. So, without further ado, here is Paul Stevenson.
So, Paul, it's an absolute delight to welcome you to the podcast. You played in a side that was a huge part of my childhood, so it's a real pleasure to have some time with you to talk about you playing for York City. But before we do that, I wanted to go back to the early part of your career. You were part of the famous sort of Walls End Boys Club, a key part of a very successful youth team for Newcastle United. But you also had international honours playing for England Youth. It took me a while to sort of track it all down, but I think, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, you scored for England Youth at Elland Road versus Republic of Ireland. And just talk me through that sort of early time period of your career.
Yeah, it was a good time. I mean, best part of that was it was an injury-free time in my career. So I didn't have any issues really in my career. I had quite a few bad ones, but it was a great time. I was flying at the time, playing in the first team. Often in them days, and it might still happen a bit, the players who played in the north tended to get a bit overlooked unless you played for Man United or someone like that, you know. But yeah, I was playing in the first team at a young age, 17, and I was flying at the time, and yet I still couldn't get in England or 18s against lads who were playing in just youth teams. But I eventually got me chance and scored one, made one, hit the bar at Elland Road, which was nice. Yeah, it was a good experience. Went straight back to me little St. Vincent's where I started, giving me the greatest teacher I had, Mr. Simpson, who's not with me now, giving me a shirt. So, good days, to be fair.
Tony Daly and Neil Ruddock, I think, were part of that England youth team as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Brian Horn was a goalkeeper. Neil Ruddock was playing. And I was later to join them at Millwall a year or two later. But yeah, Tony Daly was a very good player. Probably would have been the competitor I was up against at the time. A bit different to England now. I think they've got so much, you know, if you're an under 18, you tend to play in the under 19. You know, it depends on the level of player that you are, I suppose. You might play them in the 21s, or the real exceptional ones go and play for England, don't if they're like Michael Owen or Wayne Rooney. But yeah, it was, like I say, there probably was a real condensed pool of players then days. But yeah, it was a good experience. I don't think it was as professional as it would be now. But yeah, I did enjoy it. It was a good ground to play at as well, Leeds. You know, it's proper ground, isn't it? So.
And were you always a winger growing up? Because I think I read somewhere that Johan Cruyff was a bit of an idol of yours, wasn't he? And I always remember you being really good with both feet. Was that just sort of a natural thing?
When I was growing up playing at school level and district level, Newcastle Boys, County Northumberland, I played centre midfield. But as I got at Newcastle, and there was a pretty good centre midfield player playing at Newcastle when I went there, so called Paul Gascoigne. So I ended up playing wide a lot in the youth team. And I suppose I adapted to it quite well. Probably seen as a winger because my dad played wide and he played in, you know, he'd been on Burnley's books and Middlesbrough's books. So probably one of them, like father, like son, people probably thought, you know, but I think I adapted quite well to it. But then I was to return to midfield from 30 onwards at Hartlepool, where I thoroughly enjoyed my last few years of my career. Right in the thick of it, you know, all the time. I loved it.
And you mentioned Gazza there, and you were, like I say, you were a big part of Newcastle United's history, really, because I think they were the last team that won the FA Youth Cup back in 1984. And the likes of Joe Allen, Ian Bogie, Gary Kelly, Brian Tinian, and yourself, obviously, and Gazza all went on to have fantastic careers. I mean, Gazza was pretty crackers in his 20s and his 30s. So what the hell was he like as a youngster making his way in the game?
You just couldn't settle. It was good for you, actually, for your awareness skills, because you had to have your wits about you. What was he up to the day? Had he been under the table, at the dining table? Had he tied your laces together? So when you got up, you fell over. Had he loosened all the salt and pepper pots on the table half an hour before you went into the canteen? And you just completely killed your dinner with a load of pepper or salt on it. He was no different. He was just crazy. But fun, good fun sometimes. Sometimes a pain in the proverbial, but it was just his character. I mean, probably haven't got characters like that now, but we might still have some. Like, hopefully Palmer's like that, because I like watching Palmer play. But yeah, he was just a one-off, I think, wasn't he? And I don't think we've seen the like since, really, the way he's mercurial talent. And you know, he played off the cuff. He wouldn't have lasted at Man City somewhere like that. He would have had to play off the cuff and let him. You just got to let a player like that go and control the game for you, you know?
Yeah. And I'm amazed he lasted after hearing you tell a story about how he kept nutmegging Billy Whitehurst, who's obviously got a reputation as being one of the hardest players in the game. Would you mind telling us a story about the tumble dryer?
Yeah, it was just a quick one. It was there. We're playing in training five-a-side, and I think Peter Beardsley might have had the gloves on that day. He was in goal. He kept out the way of it. Peter was quite clever. But yeah, he'd nutmeg Billy a couple of times, and Billy was just like, knew he was taking the mick out of him, like, you know what I mean? Proper. And he said, you do that again, I'm gonna bop you one. And he went, yeah, right, all right. And then he got the ball from about, it must have been about 10 yards away from Billy, and he passed it through his legs, and that was it. He just walked up and just bump, bopped him on the nose. And that was it, down. And I think at the time he said, I'm going to go and get me dad. And he says, bring whoever you want, I'll chin them as well. And that was the way. But oh yeah, there was some funny stories. He chased him into the laundry room one day, and there's no way out of the laundry room. And Brian Clark, who was the scout, who scouted a lot of us, Ian, Bogie, myself, Jeff Wrightson, and Brian was doing the kit then. And Brian followed him into the no way out. He followed Billy, trying to maybe protect Gaza as best he could, and couldn't find him. And about 10 minutes later, Brian went to get all the kit out the big tumble dryer, and an arm came out from all the clothes. He jumped inside the big tumble dryer when it was gone and pulled the door closed. Billy couldn't find him.
What sort of setting was it on?
Oh, it would have been a hot. He used to ride in the, him and another lad used to ride in the tumble dryer on cold just for the crack. So honestly, some funny days that we look back, you know, good laughs, but he was like, it was non-stop with him.
You mentioned there about getting into the first team at 17, which is a, you know, great achievement, but you also touched upon sort of injuries, and I think your first bad injury came in a reserve team game, even though you were an established first team player at the time. I mean, that's really rotten luck, isn't it? And did you I think I heard another interview, you say that you were really rapid when you sort of started out. So did you sort of notice that when you came back that your pace was affected a little bit and you had to adapt?
Oh, definitely. It was definitely effective. I mean, you've got to remember as well, surgery wasn't as good then days. You're talking about in the 80s. Oh, yeah, I was as fast as anything off the mark over the first 10 yards. That's why I played on the right. I could get on the outside for fun, cross a good ball. But yeah, I played 23 league games without missing a game, and probably played most. Well, there was only one sub them days, so I probably played nearly all 90 minutes as well. But them days, the senior pros, in their wisdom, when season ended, would get their boots and go. And so there was not enough players for the reserves. So I played in the last reserve game against Everton. I tore the ligaments in the front left of my ankle. Horrendous injury. So I was a little bit bitter with Newcastle after that, because I shouldn't have played in that game. But I recovered, and it took us a while. I didn't have any summer off. I had to cancel my holiday. So it was a tough time, really. But Derek Wright was a brilliant physio. He spent a lot of time, probably took his own summer off. Got his back in about 6 to 7 months. But I never felt the same. I ended up adapting a lot of my game. You know, I had to be a bit more trickier and probably try and dribble a lot more. Whereas I could just use the pace before that, you know. I ended up playing on the left a lot more because I was easier to cut inside rather than go down the outside. So, yeah, but you just adapt, don't you? You've got to try and, you know, it's your career, it's your living, and you're just trying to, you're always adapting to how your legs are or how your mental state is. So.
Yeah, and you got back in the team despite Newcastle signing the likes of John Hendry, but you moved on to Millwall in 1988 for £300,000. And I would imagine at the time, people would have seen that as a bit of a shock. But sort of reading between the lines in some other interviews I've heard you do, I think you felt a little bit taken for granted by Newcastle in terms of your sort of wage versus your actual status of being in the first team. Is that a fair observation?
No, very fair. I mean, at the time, they bought John, and John ended up playing up front and I ended up playing wide, and I was playing well. I mean, the whole team probably did better at home, and I had some really good home games, you know, in a row. And I'd still been on a week-to-week contract. A month-to-month contract, whatever it is, or maybe a month-to-month. And these lads were coming in, on not just him, other lads were coming in and from, you know, down south and that, and they were getting paid a lot more than the local lads. And I did feel took for granted. And like I say, I was playing really, really well again. So, yeah, when Millwall came in, and I think Barnsley at the time came in, I never actually got as... I spoke to Alan Clark, I think, briefly, but John Dockley was a manager. He just died recently. He was a great guy. He came up, he just... didn't want to talk money, just wanted to talk football. He came up, I met him at the Sentinel Station, him and his chief scout, and sold the club to us. Yeah, it happened very quickly after that. And it went to a tribunal, ended up going there for that. And my first game was Liverpool away.
Yes, well, that was my next question. I mean,
where I'd just been 2 weeks earlier when Newcastle in 1-2-1.
Yeah, as debuts go, I mean, yours couldn't have gone any better, could it? You scored after 10 minutes of a game in front of a cop, I think. And I was just going to say that you had a good record at Anfield. So obviously you didn't hold any sort of fear going there.
O'Callaghan, Riley, and now a chance for Sheringham, Stevenson, and he scores!
No, I said that to the lads. I says, listen, we've got to keep them quiet and, you know, we've got to make sure we're staying. But I says, Newcastle weren't as good a side as Millwall at the time. Newcastle were lingering towards the bottom. And I said, look, we'll come and beat them here 2 weeks ago. Probably one of the few away games we did win. And yeah, and obviously I got off to the dream start, but Terry Sheringham was turned out to be a pretty good player as well. But that little turn and touch that he's to set me up was just like, it was Peter Beardsley. Like, it was just like they were on that same plane of like just players who I think almost like time stands still for them. They always seem to have time because they're just so good. And yeah, and it was just there, hit it, and I just cracked it and it went in. So happy days. Everybody went ballistic.
And you're still only 21 at this point, are you? Sort of moving to London and someone paying a fair bit of money for you. Did you sort of feel any pressure, or did the debut goal almost immediately get the fans on side, so that made that transition
a bit
easier?
Yeah, got the fans on side straight away, I think. And that was a big part of the help. But, you know, the hard part was probably about a month or two later when I was trying to find houses and settle in. And, you know, I'd been doing a lot of travelling. It wasn't like today's day. I was staying initially with the chief scout. A young lad moving from Newcastle to London is a big difference in house prices and what have you. But once I found my place and got settled in again, I think my form picked up again and had a good time at Millwall. Yeah, I scored in the Championship playoffs. I scored big games. I scored against West Ham, which was a local rivals. So I think the fans always remembered that, you know, and took us to the hearts.
Yeah, well, a lot of love from Millwall fans for you, definitely. And you played in an era where a lot was made about the sort of supply line to strikers, wasn't it? And the service that strikers would get. But I would imagine for a winger like yourself, it must have been a dream to have Teddy Sheringham and Tony Cascarino up front getting on the end of crosses.
You just said it, yeah. I mean, you know, both great headers of the ball. I think even Cass would admit that Teddy was the most accurate header of the ball ever. So he used to pass it with his head. You know, he used to do little flicks to Cass and then spin around, get the set, get out wide. Ball would come in early. Or, it'd go into Teddy. He'd head it here in one touch. He'd head it into your feet or in behind the fullback. He was that clever. So, yeah, they were both very good target men. Teddy was a 10 and a 9, really. Cass was like a big number 9. And they were a handful. Not think anybody wanted to play against them too. And they caught that division on the hop, really. Both good lads.
And you beat Newcastle 4-0, I think, a few weeks later.
It was my first home game was against Newcastle, my old team. Yeah.
So that must have felt a real satisfaction, particularly after the injury and the way you were treated and all that sort of thing.
Bittersweet, because I'm a Newcastle fan. I wanted to win because, you know, you want to win against your old clubs. But after that, I wanted Newcastle to win all the games I could and get into a safe position in the league, but they're just Newcastle in a bad run at the time, and I think they ended up going down that year.
And like I said, it was a simpler game sort of back then, and wingers, you were kind of like expected to sort of almost beat the fullback, get to the byline, cross it in. Did you work on sort of tricks and skills to beat defenders then, as well as crossing?
I always had the ability to go past the man, but I think I probably ended up using the Cruyff turn a lot more because I ended up playing on the left as I lost my pace, beating people on the outside as much, so I could use the Cruyff turn to really look as though I'm going to really cross it and then pull it back behind my legs, get to the byline, put it in my left foot, you know. But then you've got the option of doing both as well. I think when you've got pace, real pace, and like I had earlier in my career, you don't need to be as tricky. You can really get the half yard quickly, put it in. But when I played with, I would say out of all the strikers, I played with Teddy and Malcolm Allen probably to a degree. They were really good at reading when it was coming in and making the movements. We had that good understanding. And I think you see people now sometimes try and cross a ball and they try and hit it too hard. It's not about that. It's about the trajectory you get. It's about missing that first man. If you can miss the first man and land it in between defenders, that's where you get your people make your runs in between. And probably Nigel Pepper was as good as anybody making that deeper run from midfield. He was brilliant. If you could get it in between fullback and centre-half, he was great at coming in and powerful lad as well, you know.
Top player. And after 5 years at Millwall, you moved across London to Brentford. Now, I know injuries are part and parcel of football, but I wanted to check I've got all of this right, Paul. So you fractured your skull for Brentford at Bradford. You could have died. You were told you might never play again, but you were back in training within a month. You played again within 3 months. The first game back, you beat Cambridge 5-2, and you set up 4 goals. I mean, that is nothing short of remarkable. Incredible.
I think the most remarkable thing about that was I actually played, because the team were playing well, and a young lad called Darren Annan was a capable replacement. He was a different type of player, and he was just like a small, fast little thing, and, you know, worked hard and great team player. And the team had done well, but I'd been training well, and I was showing real good signs of playing back to my best. And David Webb thought the world of us, and he pulled us in the office the Friday before. And Cambridge were a bogey team as well for Brentford. They really would struggle a couple of seasons against them. And he just said, "What do you think about tomorrow?" And I went, "Yeah, I'd love to be involved. I'd love to get a few minutes." He says, "Never mind that." He says, "You're one of your best players. You're starting." And I went, "Really? Oh, well, good. Even better." He says, "I'll last as long as I can." I ended up playing about probably, I don't know, I might have played the full whack. I think I did play the full whack. And then Martin Granger played behind us, and keep us kicked at them days, goal kicks and all that. And if they aimed on my side, I just covered for him, and he just come and headed everything, so I didn't have to head it. And you see a lad called Dennis Bailey. He scored a hat-trick for QPR at Old Trafford once. And Dennis was, I think, either making his debut or he just got in the team, came over to work. And I think he scored 3 goals. I made all 3. So, no, it was good. And I had a header. My only header in that game was over the keeper, and it got cleared off the line by a bicycle kick and about late in the game. And I had a bit of a headache. I did have a bit of a headache because I hadn't headed a ball since the incident, but all good, just a headache.
Well, that was my next question. I can't quite get my own head around the fact that you would go up for a header again after that. I mean,
my mentality changed. I actually wasn't, I was pretty crap in the air up until that head injury. And then I think I got better. I had a choice, really. I had a choice of, like, be tentative and get hurt again, or be aggressive and really get up there and protect myself and try and jump higher than the guy I'm up against. And I think I remember I played against Glenn Rhoda as manager at Burnley, and Glenn said, "I can't believe how good you are in the air now." He says, "We kicked everything on your side," and he says, "You won everything." And I says, "Yeah." I says, "I've got to be." I says, "I'm not letting anybody touch this side of my head anymore." Yeah. It's flat enough now. But yeah, I think that these are the little mental tests that you get as a player. You've either got to find a way to rise to challenge, or, you know, you end up being the undoing, or you really.
I mean, we talked about adapting your game, losing the pace. I suppose it's the same with that, isn't it? You've got to adapt to continue being a professional footballer. Let's get on to the good stuff. York City. I mean, Alan Little described you as a bargain when he signed you in the summer of 1995 for £35,000. How did that move come about? And were you trying to get back north at that time?
I was, yeah. My wife was pregnant. Both my kids were born in York, because there's only 14 months between them. The second one wasn't planned that way, but wanted to have children. And we just thought it's a good opportunity to be closer to home. It's a long way from grandparents and all that. And York had just come up, and I think John McCarthy had just left for Birmingham. And Alan, yeah, through Paul Baker, who I'd known since I was a kid, said, "Yeah, we'll get this deal done." So, you know, it was a beautiful city. I mean, who wouldn't want to move to York? It's probably the most beautiful city in the north, isn't it? It's lovely, isn't it? So, yeah, we've had a good couple of years there.
And what did you make of Alan? I mean, players I've spoken to before said he was a bit of an animal, really, when he joined in training. So I wondered whether you sort of did any of your trickery near him.
I think he knew best not to come near me. I would have megged him. No, he was a great guy. I mean, you always have your little arguments with people, but I think he was a pussycat, really, you know, as a manager. But obviously as a player, he was ferocious. And you knew that. And I've no doubt when he played, he was bloody like a Terry Hurlock, you know. I mean, once he crossed that white line, similar to Terry Hurlock, once he crossed the white line off the pitch, he was a really genuinely good guy. So, yeah, we had our disagreements at times, because I was in and out with a couple of injuries there. But, yeah, I think ultimately we had probably better times than worse, you know.
Absolutely, and that's hence the reason we wanted to get you on. I mean, your debut for York City was ironically against Brentford, I think, and finished 2-2, and you got man of a match that day. Did you feel like you settled pretty quickly? I know you had an injury, which we'll come on to, but did you feel like initially it was a good move for you?
You never know what a move's going to be like when you go, you know, when you settle to a club. I mean, I had a good start in Millwall. I had a bad start, a very bad start at Brentford, where they were in a bit of a rut in the Championship. And I didn't play a game. I tore my groin within a couple of weeks, and then they're getting relegated. So David Webb come in, League One. So that wasn't a good start, although I had a really good time under David Webb there, apart from the injuries. But then, yeah, I come up to York, and you just don't know what to expect. You don't know. The lads have come up and they've jumped the league. So you're hoping that they're going to be able to adapt and rise to the challenge, and I think mostly they did. You know, they were a good, really good set, as you say, Nigel Pepper, Dean Kiely, you know, to name but a few, good players. And you know, we end up saying Gary Bull, who was good to play with. Graham Murty had a, you know, fantastic career. Crazy, John O'Green, and were pretty good careers, you would say, fantastic careers. So yeah, the good young lads supporting, so it was good. And like I say, we had it. Yeah, as you know, we had a really good run in cups and stuff like that.
Which will come on. So I mean, the big cup game that sort of happened when you first signed was Man United, but you'd got injured by that point. I think after four games, you'd snapped your arm.
Yeah,
I mean,
Andy Maxfield.
Was it?
Yeah, I did him in training. We'd done. Alan was rolling balls to the attackers, and the defender had to come out and defend you. And I dinked it over his head. And as I'm running past him, because he didn't put the brakes on, he just grabbed his and twisted his. And as I turned and hit the ground, still got me plates in on my arm.
Right, wow.
So I meant to have them out, but yeah, Andy Mack, you wouldn't have expected Andy Mack to do that, because he's such a lovely lad, you know, and he's at me and him get in touch. But just one of them things. And again, back training within a month, and then fortunately for me, I could play with like a plastic cast they made for us. So I was running around a bit like with that on, and had to be heavily bandaged, and I got back for the next round, which was good.
Were you gutted to miss the Man United game? I didn't know what you were like when you were out injured. Some players really struggled to be at the ground and that sort of thing. What were you like? Were you there to support the team?
Yeah, I was at the game. It was a good game. I think we won 3-0. It was good. I'd played there for Newcastle, and we were 2-1 up in the 90th minute, and Gordon Strachan dived for a penalty, cleverly touched it in the big ground. They got the penalty, and we drew twos each. So I had played there, but I still was gutted to miss it, because you want to play in them games, don't you?
Of course,
stadiums, you know, it really gives you like a buzz. But the lads were brilliant. They did great.
And, you know, your first season was a bit stop-start, but you had a really good end to the season. I don't know if you remember your first goal, but it came in March 1996, a brilliant free kick against Carlisle at home. And then your second goal was against Brighton on the last game of the season, which was an 11 o'clock kickoff.
That was a brilliant day. The way the league was then, we had to score three goals. We could get beat 100-3. Not that's going to happen, but we could get beat 7-3. But if we'd scored three goals, we were up, weren't we? I'm sure that's what it was. And obviously we went behind. I don't know who scored the equaliser.
I think Gary Bull might have scored it.
I think I got the second, did I?
Yeah,
and Scott Jordan got the third.
Yeah.
So once the third went in, that was, you know, we enjoyed it. But yeah, it was a good goal. Yeah, I remember it. I think Paddy played it. It was just opened up. The keeper was out his lane. I just lifted it over him. I don't know what the keeper was doing there, but he was way off, so I just dinked it over him in the far corner. So yeah, but that was a good day for us, because there was a lot of pressure on that game.
Did you guys stay over the day before then? Did you? Because Brighton's obviously a long trek from York.
I think so. Yeah, I think we would have done on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, to get there for 11 o'clock, it would have been a very early start, if not.
No, we would have stayed over for that.
And of course, the following season, everyone remembers the Everton games, like you touched upon before. And I think the role you played in the home leg where we won 3-2 was massive. And first of all, the atmosphere that night, I felt like Boone Crescent was bouncing that night, and players kind of fed off that. Is that kind of something you remember?
I think so. I mean, we had at the time, we were playing really well. We were playing with a bit of pomp, and had pretty much everybody fit and everybody firing, and yeah, I was a Newcastle fan, so I know that Mark Hottinger had been at Newcastle, and I always thought he was very good going forward. I didn't think he was a fantastic defender, so I always fancied my chances against him. And I think once you go into a game like that, and you think, and your mindset is like, yeah, I think I can do this, lad. And yeah, on the night, I think everybody played really well. Everybody. And you have to beat a team like that, you know, because obviously they're a better side and better players collectively. But I think to a man, we totally outgunned them on the night. And I think they scored a really late one to make it 3-2, but it was a 3-1 all night.
That's right, yeah. Gary Speed scored in injury time, I think. But yeah, I've got it written down about Mark Hottinger. He was Switzerland's right back at the time, and you did kind of turn him inside out for that second goal, and you curled a brilliant shot that hit the post, and Gary Bull obviously had the easiest of finishes. But be honest, were you gutted to see it come back off the post? Were you hoping that was going to curl in?
And Tolson has pulled away, and he was onside, and Stevenson's onside as well, and Hottinger has to backtrack, and Stevenson could get a second here. So unlucky, but it's got to be number two. Gary Bull knocks it in. York in front.
I think you always are, but again, I probably was one of them players. I got as much enjoyment out of making a goal as scoring it. That's, you always get more when you score. But yeah, I think because of the way football was then, wingers were more like there to create chances. You know, we did predominantly play in wide areas, and you know, you had to be able to put a good cross in, free kicks and what have you. Please for Bully, because, you know, Bully's a brilliant lad. We used to play golf together around York, all them lovely courses. And yeah, it couldn't have felt a better guy, because he was a proper little poacher. He was a good player. So yeah, it's just, as long as you scored and you win the game, I think that's what you're looking for.
And the third goal, I mean, you played a brilliant ball over the top for Graham Murty to run on. So I didn't know whether you were just sort of playing it into an area, or did you sort of see Graham in the corner of your eye and think, right, he'll outpace that
Graham
defender?
I think, I had it on the left, and I cut inside, and I see Graham making a run through the middle. And then you're just trying to put it into an area where, you know, causes the defender a problem. Can he get on it? And I think he just out-muscled the lad, if I remember right.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And the rest, he just, you know, buried it. You know, he went one with the Neville Southall and stuck it past him. So, yeah, it was a pandemonium. But like you say, Bootham Crescent was rocking that night, and unfortunately we could rarely fill it. We had our core bunch of fans, didn't we? But we never quite got the whole of York, because we could have filled it probably most weeks, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good night.
I mean, you've obviously played in some massive games for Newcastle. You mentioned London derbies for Millwall as well. But where does that night sort of rank for you when you look back on your career? Beating Everton.
That was a brilliant night. I mean, it wasn't like we just did it on the night. We got a good result there, and we fared well. It was more like a really hard workmanlike. Their wingers weren't bad. I'm sure they had either Kanchelskis.
Yeah, Kanchelskis played,
I played against Kanchelskis in the first leg, and a lot of it was like just defending and just keeping we'd worked on, you know, having a good shape. 4-4-2 is hard to break down. Even now you see teams deploy 4-4-2. Is difficult to break down. And but yeah, we just, you know, we got the result there that we needed. 1-1, Neil Twilson scored a good goal, and then obviously getting back at our place, we had a bit more of a go at them, you know, and we were a better team on the night.
They had a really strong team out as well, didn't you? Mentioned there like Limpar and Kanchelskis, and Rideout played, I think, as well, and they were FA Cup winners as well. So it was a real top effort, wasn't it, to beat that team. And like you say, it wasn't any fluke, it was well deserved. In actual fact, the 3-2 probably doesn't reflect the actual gulf on the night. Probably 3-1 would have been a fairer reflection.
Joe Royal, good manager as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the next season was your last one at Bootham Crescent, but I thought it was probably your best season that you played for us, you know, in terms of consistency and the sort of amount of games you played. And my favourite goal you scored for us was that season as well, against Millwall. Was that sort of extra sweet because it's your old club? And in fact, you seem to have a really good record against all your old clubs.
I think when I hit that, it was like 2 foot off the floor all the way till it hit the side net, like the inside of the goal. And the funny story to that was, when I came outside, I was meeting my old pal, Dave Donovan, who I still regularly keep in touch now. And I go downstairs there, and I went and met him outside, and all the Millwall fans were queuing for cup final tickets. And they were like, "Fucking Jody, you've done us the day, mate. You've done us the day, but you're all right. We love you." And I didn't get any hassle. They were all queuing and they're just laughing and joking. I said, "Oh, great goal," and that. And yeah. It was a sweet goal to get, like, so. But yeah, it did seem to get goals against me old clubs. Apart from Newcastle, I would never have been able to live again if I'd scored against them. So I made sure I kept away from that one.
I mean, one of the craziest games I remember growing up was when we beat Carlisle 4-3. And 3-1 down with 12 minutes to go, you scored two, and then Steve Bushell got the winner. I mean, some belief from the team to come back in that game.
Yeah, I think we turned the tide and we got the momentum. Like, did I score this to make it 3-2?
3-2 and 3-3, you've got.
Yeah, I scored a free kick, I think, as well. Little nick off the wall, but it was enough to get past the keeper. It was a fair way out. And then, Bush got the winner, and it went mental. And he had a knack of doing that, Bush. He could come up with that big player now and then. And great kid. And delighted to see him get the winner. But, yeah, it was a good... That's one of the games at York, along with Everton, that sticks in your mind a lot because of the way it finished. And obviously, the one down at Brighton, like you mentioned, because obviously the importance of it, you know.
And we talked a bit about injuries in this podcast. And I was watching back the FA Cup highlights when we played Southport in the FA Cup. I don't know if you remember this, but I don't know how you escaped a serious injury. One of our challenges, I think you had 9 stitches.
He tried to do his just below the knee. I cleared it and he just... put his studs and he's trying to break my leg, the lad, whoever it was, Nugget Head. And it did go through the pad and everything, you know. So luckily I had the pads on. Where the pads at the way now, you would have a broken leg. Yeah. But I had a proper pad on it, just hit the pad first and then just went into the shin. And it was a decent gash down into the bone. But luckily for me, not a leg break.
Because players get a bit more protected, I think, these days, isn't it? Whereas your day, wingers just got kicked. I mean, do you wish you sort of played in this era, or are you quite glad you played in the era?
I don't think any white player with any brain would not want to play in this day and age. You could have people on toast. You probably took about 3 or 4 really severe challenges before the referee even had a chat with the defender. It was like a given that you're going to get that treatment. So you had to have your wits about you. You had to be ready to evade challenges, evade high boots. And I think today now it's completely different, isn't it? You know, they don't even get touched now and they get a free kick. So if you're a player like 1v1 situations like I did, and most of the white players did then, once you've got your fullback on a yellow, it's like red rag to a bull. You're just going for his jugular every time. Mm. You just test them, you know. But the defender's MD has got away with murder.
It did. And I've heard the sort of 3 seasons you were at York were sort of mixed in terms of like how high up we came in the league. Like you mentioned, there was some hell of a lot of talent in that dressing room, wasn't there? And some other players as well, like Alan Poulton and Rodney Rowe and Mark Tinkler as well. Do you think the team, sort of looking back, maybe underachieved a little bit?
Yeah, possibly. I think at the time, though, didn't the owner at the time,
Douglas Craig, yeah.
Douglas Craig, didn't he view on like a lot of the lads, like a bit older like myself and Gary, and didn't he view on us as being like a bit too old and having no value? So he diluted a lot of the team, didn't he, in the end? So you can't just have a team with all young players. You do need some experience, you know, some cracking players in that team, like you mentioned. And Tony Barras, the centre-half, was a...
really good player. And you moved on to Hartlepool, and I think the club transfer listed you to try, you and some other players, to try raise some money. Were you disappointed how that kind of ended at York then, particularly as you were playing some really good football around that time as well?
Yeah, I think I was playing well, but I think what made the mind up was I got my very first really bad, like, first knee injury in my last game for York, and that was at Preston. I think I remember I whipped a free kick in from the left, and Rodney got a great little nick on it, and he scored the goal. I think we drew 1-1 each, but I got a bad knee injury that day, and then my first knee injury just got caught with my foot planted in the lad quarters and twisted my body, and I felt the nick on the inside of my knee, and it was needed trimmed. But then that was the start of my knee starting to get in problems, so I've got a full knee replacement now. So, but I had a few injuries, and then I think I signed for Hartlepool with that knee injury, because it was like I was due to be back in a week or two, you know, and it took us a while to get going again. But Paul Baker, again, instrumental, because Paul had moved to Hartlepool and he clearly knew, you know, what I was capable of. So
did it feel a bit like sort of going full circle signing for Hartlepool, sort of going back to the northeast?
A little bit, but it meant I could live home, and I had 2 young pups, grandparents, desperate to see them, and, you know, family, my brother. So my brother had Roberts, and then we had Joseph, and then he had Michael, and then we had Olivia. So there's 4 of them in the space of like 4.5 years. So it was a good time for the kids to go and see cousins and what have you, you know.
Yeah, and you reinvented yourself, didn't you, as a deep line midfielder with Mark Tinkler again alongside you. And I think you won Player of the Year for Hartlepool in 2000, and you made over 150 games for them as well. Was that a happy time of your career? Were you quite pleased with the sort of end of your career?
Yeah, I think the last season where I played and I still had my knee not moving or wobbling. I think I did have a solid season, 52 games, probably 52, 90 minutes as well. Probably took the ride out of us for the year after. But, you know, I was as fit as a... If my knees had held up, I think I was as fit as I've been. I had good legs around us. Tommy and Tinks. Tommy Miller was brilliant. Tinks a great lad, great player. Still keep in touch with him. And yeah, we probably were as good a midfield in that league at the time. I think all complemented each other. But I ended up playing the deeper one. But if I move forward, Mark was intelligent. Mark would slot in for us. So catch teams unaware. I think I scored about 7-8 goals from like a deep midfield role. So it was good. Chris changed me position, Chris Turner, and I thanked him for it because I had no future as a white player because I definitely couldn't beat people for pace by then. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It was good. You're involved all the time. So it was a position I wish I'd been involved in longer, you know what I mean? Because I loved it. You're involved in every play, you know, and you can't knock off. But I think when you play wide, you can knock off and you can have a tendency to drift because you're not getting it and you're getting frustrated and, you know, you're not having a kick. Whereas in the middle, you're involved defensively all the time, you know. So good end of my career, I think.
And you played something like, I think, over 500 games as a professional footballer. I mean, it's a hell of a career in the game. And you clearly would have played even more than that without the injuries as well. Does that amount of games and the injuries, does it take its toll on you after you finish playing? Because I think a lot of times... us as fans, we sort of forget when players sort of leave clubs, like what impact that has. You know, people think it's a great life as a footballer. You know, they only train in the morning and this, that and the other and the adulation and that. But there must be, I'm just thinking about your injuries in particular, they must have an impact on your body when you finish football.
They do, you know, I got me in full knee replacement, not this December, December 23. It's the best thing I've had done. It's changed my life. I couldn't, my leg was so bored by the end because of decay on the inside of my knee that the pain I was in on my IT band and the tendons on the outside of my thigh, it was excruciating. I must have had 10 to 12 years of just like painkillers and all that. But I don't take a odd time now. I'll have a paracetamol. I rarely take a painkiller. Mm-hmm. So it's been a good lucky end for me that I got this done and straightened and a bit of arthritis in my left knee. Got no hair now, as you can see. So that double depressed fractured skull that I've got here is not as noticeable as I thought it would be. I always thought, God, I lose my hair with a big bloody dint on the side of my head. But you'd have to put your hand on there to feel how flat it is compared to this side, you know. So you know when you get in a profession like football, you know what it's going to be like and you're going to have injuries and you're going to have challenges. I always think my mental toughness and coming back from injuries was helped that I'd went through that process at 17 at Newcastle and it sort of, because I come through it, I had the belief I could always come through it. And I think it's harder for a player if they've gone through the whole career and they've got the 30 and just have one. Can they deal with that? That's probably a bit harder, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. But any player who played like 18 years and had 18 pre-seasons will tell you it's not an easy life. It might be that they get way too well rewarded now, I think. But it's not their fault. No. Who's going to turn it down? But yeah, I think every player will tell you it's a really tough. It's even harder now for the very top players. I can't believe they're still playing football. It's outrageous. Just like pieces of meat, really, aren't they? It doesn't matter how wealthy they are and how much money they're getting. They're like, everybody needs, it's not the physical. They need a mental break from it. And I think most players will tell you that once the season ended, they needed to switch off for a good 2-3 weeks. Forgetting about it.
Not fly off to the other side of the world to do it.
Fly off to the other side of the world. And then, I mean, they'll be knackered next year. Good for us, Newcastle, because we're not there.
And one thing you mentioned there about the difference between when you played and sort of now, and you obviously went into coaching, you've worked for lots of different clubs at lots of different levels of the game, different age groups. And I wondered, as someone who's been sort of in that YTS academy, and you were, I'm sure you would have been scrubbing the boots and that sort of thing. How is it working with youngsters who don't have that sort of grounding?
I just think we grew up with that. That was part of what you did as an apprentice then. It did give you some responsibility. You know, if you didn't do them properly, you were punished for it. You know, you'd do some running or you'd do extra training or you'd not get away at a late cleaning or whatever it was. And I think it did give us some grounding in terms of, like, you know, being, reliable. And if a manager can rely on you to do a job in a game as well. And obviously all that's changed now. It's gone down. I think there's room for a bit of, obviously, new school and old school now. The good old school things that we learned, and it's being reliable, being dependable. I think doing an honest shift, I think all that still applies now. All the best players do that anyway.
Yeah, just maybe not putting them in the tumble dryers.
Yeah, I mean, I would advise against going in a tumble dryer with all the clothes on hot. You could dehydrate quite quickly.
And speaking of sort of nod there to Gaza, You had such a stellar career. I wondered who was the best player you ever played with. What is it? Just Gazza every day of the week, or was
no? It's Beardsley. It's Peter Beardsley. I think anybody who played with Peter Beardsley will tell you. And Gazza was amazing. Don't get us wrong, but Peter Beardsley was just Gazza. Probably say it. Peter Beardsley was just like unbelievable. His decision making, his execution, the critical moments. 99.9999 made the best decision. And executed it well. He was just a special player. And, you know, Sheringham was up there as well with him. Gascoigne was an unbelievable player. But Pedro was, I don't know how much either all three of them would cost now.
A hell of a lot of money.
Maybe
yeah.
Some transfer fee.
And what about against you? Sort of as a winger, we saw you at York get the better of many a fullback. And I know you got the better of likes of Jim Beglin at Liverpool early in your career. But was there any players that you didn't like playing against or you felt like you didn't get much change out of?
No, not didn't like playing against. I know a young Julian Dix, when I played against him in Birmingham, he was just a whippet then. And he didn't have any, he wasn't the size he was when he finished his career, let's say, in terms of bulk and all that. But, you know, he was a pretty ferocious player when I played against him at West Ham as well. You know, he loved the challenge. The fans goaded him into it. But when I played against him at Birmingham before he left there, he was a terrific player. All the attributes that you would associate with the modern sort of fullbacks. And I laugh like mad when they say, oh, like, you know, they've been saying, well, he has a fullbacks attack now. And I played against Julian Dix and I played against Stuart Pearce. They spend half the time defending against them. They're bombing all the time. Yeah. It's a load of codswallop. It's just people just trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel. The only thing that's changed in the game is the definitions and how people have made them sexier. Most of the game, you know, yes, the game has changed in terms of playing out from the back and all that. Of course it has. But people have got far too bogged down in playing out from the back that they forgot how to score a goal. A lot of them teams. So, yeah. Brilliant game, but everyone has their opinions on it.
And are you still involved in coaching now then, Paul?
Not now. No, I've just left it. I've left it for the time being. Never say never. Last role was with Northern Ireland under 21s and we've enjoyed it. Just probably wasn't enough volume of work with being international camps. But great set of lads, honest as the day is long, put in some fantastic performances. What a great under 21 Euros campaign last year. We finished, I think, as high as we've ever done. Fantastic draw against England, the 21s in Ireland. When you look at the players that they've got playing, mostly all Premier League players. And yeah, we were good value for that weird draw on the night.
So never say never, but at the minute you're out.
No, not for now.
Yeah. Fair enough. And do you still look out for your old clubs? I know the fortunes of Brentford versus York City and Hartlepool couldn't be more contrasting these days, but do you still look out for all your old clubs?
They've got it for York, like they didn't get up. I thought they need to change, in my opinion. The conference is so strong now. I think the top two got to go up, and then
yeah.
I think the third place has got to be a playoff. I don't see how three can't come down from the Football League. Obviously, people in the Football League are frightened of it. Their team going down, so it's a bit of a comfort blanket. But yeah, and I remember the year that York went down, and I was at Accrington Stanley with James, and they had a good budget that year, didn't they? So there's no guarantees. I think York had as good a budget as any. Carlisle had as good a budget as anybody last year, but I'm led to believe. And they've gone through the trapdoor, so you're not guaranteed anything, are you?
No, football doesn't care about your history or your budgets, does it?
I do keep an eye on York. All the clubs. Yeah, still there. I think you always have an affinity with them, and there's some sort of attachment to them. Millwall probably is in Newcastle. I go up Newcastle, I get invited up there with the former Players Association now and then, and probably been down to Millwall a couple of times for some events and that, and I'd like to go again. And yeah, people can't forget them days because it was such, you know, great days for that club. So Brentford are actually better now than what they were when we were there.
Yes, so, I wish you were playing now for them. Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thanks again for giving up your time, and you know,
go
enjoy the sun. It's going to be a heat wave, I think.
I've been up since 6 o'clock. I'm an early riser. I'm normally a bit later than that, like, but I was sat in the back garden at 6 and it was just glorious. Not a sound in the world. Said birds, and it was ice. So I probably need a kip sometime in the day because I've been up way too early. Fall asleep in the back garden with a bit of luck.
Enjoy it.
Mate. Nice meeting you. All the best.
So thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that. As ever, like any player from the 90s, absolutely gives me a massive buzz because these are my childhood heroes, and Steve-O was definitely one of those. I didn't want to blow too much smoke up his ass during the interview, but yeah, absolutely loved watching him play. I'm always a huge fan of wingers back then, and Paul was a great player. Lots of skill and trickery and an opinion very much shared by James.
Wright, who was one of our sponsors. Like I said before, always great to have new sponsors on board, so I really appreciate James getting in touch and sponsoring a couple of episodes. Next week, we will have the last one of the series, which is Gary Swan, I think the ultimate cult hero, really. Grew up in York, but signed for Hull City as a young lad, then on to Preston and before coming to Boven Crescent in 1992 for two very successful seasons, the first of which, obviously, went the whole season in the heart of the midfield without scoring, but then popped up to get the winner in the semi-final of the playoffs against Bury and then scored again at Wembley in the final against Crewe. So lots and lots of good stories from his time at Boven Crescent and also about the kind of rest of his career, which involved signing for that team up the road and then a spell playing in Asia. Really intelligent guy and, yeah, speaks very articulately about kind of the influence that John Ward had on that side and consequently Alan Little as well. So, yeah, hope it's a good one to kind of end the series on, so you can join us again next time for that. As ever, just very quickly, justgiving.com/yourcosplayradio if you want to donate to the charity. Please subscribe, rate, review, that sort of thing. Really helps us as a charity as well. Obviously, this is a very nostalgic-based podcast, but I'm also involved in another podcast called The Crux of It, which is a more kind of up-to-date type thing, focusing on the kind of current goings-on at York City. So you can find that on Spotify and Apple as well. It's lots of different types of content on there, from kind of previewing, reviewing stuff, press conferences, also the live events with the York City Supporters Trust tend to go on that feed as well, so lots of stuff to enjoy on that feed if you like hospital ball. And just finally, like I've mentioned in the previous podcast, that I've got an involvement with the Paddy McLaughlin testimonial year, so please keep your eyes peeled for lots more news on events. There's a foot golf competition that I think there's still tickets for at time of recording this. There's a Haxby sports bar event which is sold out, but there is a waiting list if you want to kind of be on that if you haven't yet got a ticket. And then there's a dinner coming up as well, which there'll be news of coming out on social media very shortly. So thanks again for listening, and hopefully see you next time for the Gary Swan episode.